betting odds, line movement, futures, and more. It's everything you need to know about sports betting. It's The Money Line with Jim Irizarry on Sports Radio 960 AM, WSBT.
Hi and hello. Monday night, of course, it is time for The Money Line. I am Jim Irizarry. The worst social channels on the internet are up and running, of course, at The Money Line. Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, however you need to ingest the minimal crappy posts. I've got you covered. The Olympics, they're all done. Done and over with, which means we're back on that football and baseball tip, quite honestly. But first, some news from the past couple of days. More kind of businessy type stuff, really. DraftKings is going to be buying Golden Nugget Online Gaming in an all-stock acquisition for $1.56 billion. Wonder how that was funded. Might have been funded out of all my mistakes. Who knows? More and more sportsbooks are adding better iGaming to their platforms, including casino games with live dealers, which is something that that Golden Nugget added. This deal also means that Golden Nugget can now also take bets on the Houston Rockets, owned by Tilman Fertitta, who was before the sole owner of Golden Nugget. NBA rules kept that from happening, so there you go. Also, Penn National, the owner of Barstool Sportsbook, and you know they do all the funding with Barstool Sports in general. They're buying The Score for $2 billion in cash and stock. The Score has been a mostly scores app since 2007, but launched a sports book in the fall of 2019. It is available here in Indiana. It's also available in Iowa, Colorado, and New Jersey. The Score is going to continue to be based in Canada, where it's the number one sports media brand and number three behind ESPN and Yahoo in North America overall. It's also going to continue to operate as a standalone business. Whether we'll start seeing some shared marketing deals or increased betting opportunities from these deals, all that remains to be seen. All these deals have to be closed first for any of that stuff to happen. So we're still quite a ways away on that. I think that deal with The Score, I don't think that's going to be finishing up until like early part of next year. So, you know, business as usual for us consumers, quite honestly. Coming up, first full week of the NFL preseason starts on Thursday. Thursday. How should you bet the preseason if you decide to go that route? You know, I guess bettors need some training camp as well. There's some trends to be aware of. And, you know, when it comes to those games that don't count in the record book, they do count your wallet somehow. So you got to get your mind right, okay? I'll have those little trends for you coming up. You are listening to The Money Line on Sports Radio 960 AM WSBT.
Back to The Money Line with Jim Irizarry on Sports Radio 960 AM WSBT.
So if some of this info is going to sound like a little bit of a repeat, I talked about it last week with Sean during our more Moneyline segment on, I think it was both days, Wednesday and Friday. Kind of touched on both of these topics as far as the NFL goes. So if it sounds like a repeat, sorry. I'm sure you can handle it, okay? Plus, who knows? Maybe you totally forgot about it, and maybe you just didn't hear it the first time anyway. So the NFL preseason. Getting underway in mass on Thursday, except for the Cowboys and Steelers, who, of course, played each other in the Hall of Fame game last week. Every team just has three preseason games. Don't forget about that. They cut one off since they added the other regular season game into everybody's schedule. So there's actually some chances to get your betting mind in shape for football during the preseason. Point totals, they can be fun to track, but what else is there? How should you bet the preseason, quite honestly? If you're betting how many touchdowns a first-string quarterback gets in the preseason, seek help! Like I said, I fell down a rabbit hole last week, and I discovered some things that could help you out as far as getting your wallet ready for the NFL season coming up. Trend number one, take the Ravens straight up. Under John Harbaugh, Baltimore is 37-12 straight up in the preseason. That's over his entire coaching tenure, okay? Last time Baltimore lost a preseason game was September 3rd, 2015. That's 17 preseason games ago. Ravens, straight up. Trend number two, go with non-conference underdogs. It's a number of games that we see in the preseason that we typically don't see during the regular season, you know, maybe like once every 4 years or so, but during the preseason, this is where those, you know, geographic rivalries, you know, Giants-Jets, Rams-Dodgers, Washington and Baltimore, that's when all those games are played, is during the preseason, all right? They're all teams that you probably won't play again until late in the season at the earliest, you know? Like, I know the Bears have the Dolphins as part of their preseason schedule. Maybe they'll play in the Super Bowl. Sorry, I couldn't make it through that without laughing. But anyway, underdogs have collectively gone 458, 321, and 3 against the spread in those interconference preseason games since 2004. So, like, you know, Giants and Jets, you know, in there, in that record, 458, 321, and 3 against the spread. Underdogs of 5.5 or more points are 39-25. That's, whew, okay. Underdogs of 1 to 3 points, 266, 222, and 21 overall. Trend number three, big over-under drops mean big money. In games where the total was dropped 2 or more points, the under hit at a rate of 57.8%. It doesn't work in the opposite direction either. Like if a point total goes up 2 or more points, the record on that, 39-47-1. Kind of, you know, maybe it will, but I mean that 57.8% rate, I'd rather go with that. Trend number four, target the poor man's John Harbaugh's. John Harbaugh, the Vince Lombardi of preseason, apparently. Go for those coaches that seem to flex a little muscle in the preseason. You know, for some reason, like getting, like all games are the same for these guys. John Gruden is one of those guys where as long as you're strapping on pads and a helmet and playing football, this game counts. You know, that type of mentality. Gruden, by the way, 7-1 against the spread in his couple of years since his returning to the Raiders. Mike Zimmer in Minnesota. He covers the spread 73.9% of the time in the preseason. And then Pete Carroll. His first season in Seattle, okay, went 0-3-1 against the spread. Fine, whatever. Since then, he's gone 25-11 in the preseason against the spread. And then trend number five, fade the true goats here. Bill Belichick and Andy Reid, you know what they're using the preseason for, all right? They're trying to figure out their depth charts. They could give a flying flip about whether or not they win a preseason game, all right? As long as the guys that they need to look good in a game, you know, are getting their reps and they're looking good in those reps, that's all they care about. They don't care about the final score of a preseason game, for crying out loud. They save their winning for the games that actually count. And it shows. They are a combined 57-65 against spread in games that don't count, a.k.a. the preseason. So, Bill Belichick, Andy Reid, fade them whenever you get the chance. Big thing about Colts camp right now, who's going to be the quarterback in week one? Carson Wentz went down with that foot injury. It's going to keep him out as late as week 7. Quentin Nelson also got the same injury. Needed the same surgery. Out the same length of time. I've never heard of an offensive lineman and a quarterback combination getting not just the same injury, but the same surgery and then the same like prognosis for recovery. I've never seen that before. So Wentz could be out as late as week 7. or he could respond well to treatment, be back for week one even. He'll probably fall somewhere in between those two. Colts have Jacob Eason as the backup, along with rookie Sam Ellinger out of Texas, and former backer, Packer backup, that is. Packer backup, Brett Hundley. So who does Frank Reich go with? Right now, the favorite at DraftKings is Eason at minus 150, which makes sense. He's the backup. He's been there learning Reich's system for the last year, even though he still hasn't made an NFL pass attempt, preseason or otherwise. Didn't have preseason last year because of COVID. Next on the list is Bears quarterback Nick Foles at plus 250. Now, if this was going to be the play, the Colts would have made some sort of move for Foles by now. Like, too much time has gone by for Foles to still be at plus 250. But there he is. Like, if that were going to be the play, that move would have been made already. I think they're taking Carson Wentz's mindset into account here, too. How, like, they're trying not to basically have the guy who was his backup, who arguably stole his Super Bowl start and Super Bowl MVP trophy away from him. You probably don't want that guy around a, you know, around your starting quarterback who you're trying to basically press the reset button with. I don't think Foles comes into play here. I think like plus 250. Come on, man. Brett Hundley is next at plus 400. The Colts signed him after Wentz went down. Of course, you may remember him from that Packers season when Aaron Rodgers got hurt and missed the playoffs. Colts fans just going, yeah. Still, he's the lone quarterback on the roster with the actual NFL in-game experience. So, you got that. And then Wentz is next on the list at plus 500. That's a lot of optimism there. That is a lot of optimism. Personally, I think he's going to be back around like week three or four. Ellinger's next at plus 650. The rest of the names are all guys on other teams that, again, like Nick Foles, if the Colts were going to go after any of these guys, they would have already. Marcus Mariota out in Oakland is on that list. Jimmy G out in San Francisco on that list. Gardner Minshew in Jacksonville. Blake Bortles all on that list. Phillip Rivers is on that list, for crying out loud. At least Phillip Rivers makes sense because he was the Colts quarterback last year. He at least knows the system. Plus 1,200, by the way, for old man Phil. I'd pick Rivers starting for the Colts over any of those other guys, over, you know, Mariota, Jimmy G, Minshew, Bortles. Phil Rivers all the way over any of those guys. So, smart money, just go with Eason. The Colts seem all in on him. You know, whenever you hear any of their press conferences, Frank Reich at the mic or the GM, Chris Ballard, at the mic, you know, they're all in on Jacob Eason. I don't think he's going to be that great of an NFL quarterback. He might be a decent NFL backup, though, and that's kind of what the Colts just need right now. They're probably going to lean heavy on Jonathan Taylor to start the season. They'll probably lean heavily on Jonathan Taylor all season long, quite honestly. So, Jonathan Taylor, Nyheim Hines, expect a lot of those guys. If you're a fantasy guy, look at those two guys, especially. Coming up, got the night in baseball. This is The Moneyline on Sports Radio, 960 AM WSBT.
Back to The Moneyline with Jim Irizarry on Sports Radio, 960 AM WSBT.
Not much in the way of baseball tonight. Just five games tonight in Major League Baseball. The Reds and Indians are playing for the Ohio Cup. Woo! That's what they do for their interstate rivalry. You know, like the Crosstown Classic with the Cubs and White Sox. Subway Series with the Mets and Yankees. Freeway Series with the Dodgers and Angels. Ohio Cup for the Reds and Angels, for the Reds and Indians. That's what they do. Both teams were off today, too. Like, Cleveland starts a series, I think, with Oakland tomorrow. So, Cleveland on top, bottom of the third, 5-1. Two men on still with two outs, first and second, those men on. Elsewhere in baseball. The White Sox are in Minnesota to play the Twins. White Sox are 12-4 against Minnesota, and in those 16 games, they've averaged almost 7 runs while hitting .289. Now they get to face Bo Burrows and Charlie Barnes, okay? Bo Burrows has an ERA of 11. Charlie Barnes at 6.23. They're the first two pitchers in a Twins bullpen game. What I'm saying is back Lucas Giolito and the Sox on the run line at -107, okay? White Sox over the Twins. Milwaukee at -180 takes on the Cubs at Wrigley Field. The odds aren't nearly enough in the favor of the Brewers here, quite honestly. They're the much better team. It's not even close anymore. Freddie Peralta has been dominant this season. For 4 previous starts against the Cubs, he's pitched to a 2.14 ERA with a whip of 1, 33 strikeouts in 21 innings. He's been one of the best pitchers in baseball. He allows just 4.2 hits per 9 innings. That's a major league best. And of course, as we've been beating into the bush, beating to death since it's all happened, these aren't the same Cubs that he stifled earlier this season either. They're worse. Strike while the iron hot. While the iron's hot, pick the Cubs to lose, okay? By the way, if you don't like that -180, take the over of 9 runs. And if you even want to throw that in favor of Milwaukee, I would suggest doing that. The Yankees at -177 are in Kansas City. I get it. The Yankees' offense not exactly to be trusted right now. Anthony Rizzo's out. Aroldis Chapman also out. He's hurt. Those factors mean the odds trimmed down to a workable play, though. The Yankees are the far superior team. Jameson Taillon taking the hill. He's been pretty good for them of late. He's got a 1.45 ERA while holding opponents to a 1.82, 2.47, and 3.03 slash in his last 6 starts. Not bad. His year-long splits, though, show he's far worse on the road. 4 of those 6 starts came on the road, though. So, something to keep in the back of your mind. Plus, he gets a Royals offense that's 14th of 15 AL teams in runs and 13th in OPS. Yeah, Yankees, 177. And then Miami is at San Diego. Miami hosted San Diego for a 4-game series last month, and 2 of the contests were 1-run decisions. Marlins won the final 2 games of that set after losing the first 2. In addition, 2 of the last 4 games that Joe Musgrove has pitched for the Padres, they were decided by a single run, including his turn against Oakland on Wednesday. Take the Marlins to cover the 1.5 here, all right? Chances of that happening at -110. Starting tomorrow, going to see a number of big series starting, including the Dodgers at Philadelphia, Tampa Bay at Boston, Washington at the Mets. Lots of division races in play this week, so should be good for your wallet. Keep you on top, keep you sharp. If soccer's more your language, the Premier League starts on Friday. Man City favored to repeat as champions at -139. Next is Chelsea and Liverpool at +500, followed by Man U at +650. And then after that, it's just a free-for-all. Leicester City and Tottenham Hotspur at +4,000 each. Tottenham Hotspur, by the way, more known for their stadium here in the States because that's where all the European NFL games are played now. It's pretty cool, too. They have, like, an all-natural grass pitch for the soccer, and then, like, they move in a, like that textured AstroTurf in for the NFL games. If you find it on YouTube, it's one of those things that might actually help you get to sleep. It's just that soothing, you know? Anyway, Arsenal's at +6,600. And then we're getting into the tens of thousands, all right? Almost hundreds of thousands. Norwich City, Watford, and Brentford, they're all at +100,000. And since I don't have much in the ways of Premier League knowledge, I've decided to take some info from an actual soccer insider, especially as far as European soccer goes, Premier League, whatnot. Martin Green of Sportsline.com thinks that you should do the following if you're going to lay any sort of money on the Premier League. Man City to win, Arsenal with a top six finish, Leeds with a top half finish, and then Watford and Burnley getting regulated, or relegated. Regulated. It is kind of regulated too, but relegated is the term there. If there's anything that any American league should consider, by the way, if you want a copy from the Premier League, it's relegation. The NBA is taking harder steps to make tanking harder, but even so, Detroit and Oklahoma City each pulled epic tank jobs last season. Basically, entire teams would be sent down a level, while the best of the minors would be moved up. Could you imagine a G League team moving up to the NBA? They'd be destroyed. But they'd earn it. I think it would be awesome, by the way. I think you could probably pull it off in a couple of college conferences, even SEC, definitely. Make an SEC 2 or something. Just put Vanderbilt in there for football already. Don't even think about that one. That would just be awesome, I think. Relegation, come on. Come on, sports leagues. I want to see a couple of AHL teams get up to the show. The whole team just up to the show. That's it for me. I'm Jimmy Irizarry. The worst socials on the internet, of course, are there for you at the Moneyline 960 on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. I do have some fun there on occasion, just occasionally though. South Bend Cubs are in this spot for the rest of the week again, so I'll see you Wednesday and Friday at 6 p.m. during Budweiser's weekday sports beat with Sean for our more Moneyline segment. And of course, back with you for a full episode next Monday. Just think, in a month, I'll get two shows a week. Hooray, football. Until next time, bet smart.
You've been listening to The Moneyline with Jim Irizarry on Sports Radio 960 AM, WSBT. Catch the podcast at WSBTradio.com.